Moncrief on News Talk.
You may have come across adult-only hotels. No, it's not for swingers or naked pool parties, but simply places where you won't see parents wiping snot from children's faces. You won't hear little ones begging for chocolate or hysterically crying. And if you do hear hysterically crying, it'll be from grown-ups, and therefore much more interesting. The writer Sophie White recently booked her three children into a kennel to spend some time with her fella. Her latest book, also about holidays, is called Such a Good Couple. Sophie, good afternoon to you.
Hello. Can you see how refreshed I am?
Yes.
Well, there's an inner glow.
Is there? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm 2 weeks back to what my friend and I called the re-entry to parent life. And they haven't kind of eroded me yet.
Okay, so there's a lasting effect from it.
Absolutely. There's a kind of an afterglow. You've got a kind of the callus that you have built up over years of parenting doesn't weaken in their absence. It actually consolidates, gets stronger. My patience is at an all-time high.
Yeah.
I'm being a really nice person to my kids. Yeah.
Fantastic. Result
also,
then.
Yeah. And you mentioned kennels.
Yes.
This is a business idea I genuinely want to start.
Mm.
Like, I know now people get uncomfortable when you start treating kids exactly like dogs.
But people treat dogs like kids, so why not?
Exactly. Exactly. We need to just put that shame aside. We need to say kids and dogs, very similar, really.
Mm.
They're on all fours for a lot of time.
Yeah.
Also,
mm.
You know, they are very affectionate. And why not take those affections to a kennel, humane storage?
And they'll poop everywhere, give them half a chance, most of them. Yeah.
My husband and I went on our first ever, since becoming parents, adults-only holiday.
Yeah.
And it was my first experience of an adults-only hotel. I did not know these existed.
Mm.
And I spent about a week kind of like shouting about how I was going to an adults-only hotel. Adults-only hotel sounds so exciting. Finally, my family put me straight and said, that sounds like it's some kind of, are you going to a high-class orgy? What's happening? And so that obviously then I was very interested to see who was in the hotel room beside ours. And it was great. The people watching was mighty. And the couples fighting was unfortunately a bit thin on the ground.
Oh.
We were on watch, like on the qui vive constantly. Like, does anyone look like they're kind of losing the rag with each other? Very, very, it was just very harmonious, disappointing.
Mm. Mm.
But, you know.
Yeah. Now,
Shinae,
your mother is like, looks after the kids. Yeah. And so kind of no worries in that regard. But did you kind of...
Oh, no, I have worries.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Like they can physically overpower her. She is a very petite, lovely woman. And I have three boys and each of them, like the baby, even the very smallest one, is a very dense individual, like heavier than a dying star. He could absolutely pin her. No problem. And he's only five.
Yeah. So then when you first arrived for the first day or two, was there kind of a guilt, you know, checking in at home all the time kind of thing going on? Or did you manage to kind of just put a line in it and act like you didn't have children?
Now, you have to invite in a little, like a certain level of sociopathy and just be like, no, that's it now. I may never see those people.
Cool.
One thing I do, and I do this when I go away for work as well, is I make heartfelt YouTube videos, just unlisted. Now, you can't find them on YouTube. You have to have the special link to get it. And I make one for each of my kids in case I don't make it. And I just...
Is it a new one every time you go away? Or was this the same one do?
I've had to update them. I'd say my oldest is 11, so I've done about four different versions for him because I need to like name check their individual characteristics so they know they're not just getting a generic script.
Yeah.
So
okay.
It's very emotional. Sometimes I nearly move myself when I'm filming them. And then I email the links so that they are ready for just in case I don't make it. Yeah.
But would they not look at them anyway? Or do they?
I don't give them the links.
Oh.
I don't.
Well, how will they find the links if you're dead?
Oh, I email them.
Yeah.
To be opened in the event of my tragic demise.
All right. Okay. Yes. And they don't open that email?
No. No.
You're sure?
No, I don't want them to know how much I care because then they'll know what they've got over me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so the other people staying in this hotel, were they...
Very attractive. Yeah.
Yes, that's good. But were they mostly people who didn't have kids anyway, or people who had done what he had done?
I'd say they were people who've done hard time. Yeah, they have had kids. Yeah,
yeah.
Definitely, definitely. And it was absolutely brilliant. So good. And it actually, it came on the heels of my latest book coming out. And I don't say that to do an awkward segue
into
the book,
plugging your book, yeah.
But the book is set on an adults-only holiday. Was kind of an adults-only holiday. It's three couples who go away together, and they have such a kind of comprehensive staff looking after the kids that they, you know, are basically humane storaging the kids while they are living it up in Cape Cod. And so I think I'd obviously subconsciously been so dying for a holiday solo that I wrote a whole book about it on my way to actually managing to do it.
Have you ever stayed in Cape Cod?
I've been there once. I went over to Boston. Again, this is going to sound like I led you down this line of questioning, but I was over there accepting an award. I was accepting an award.
Stop, for what?
For a novel I wrote called Where I End in all good bookshops. And I went to Provincetown, Cape Cod.
That was a really scary book.
That was a scary book.
Yeah.
That was a book actually in which the mother didn't fare well. And obviously my own mother in real life, like, I do genuinely worship her. She's an angel. She's walking among us mortals. But, like, she's an absolute legend to do that. Like, she took on my kids for 5 days. And, yeah, she's a legend. She's not even listening. There's no way. I'm not even saying that because she's listening and I'm trying to stop.
Oh, God.
But I was saying then, you see, after my mom agreed to this, I was like, do you know what we need to do is, like, friends all need to start doing this for each other. Like, I was saying to my friend, you get your husband, you guys go. I will move into your house. Your house is cleaner than mine. You have one less child than I do. This will be a holiday for me too. And like, we need to facilitate each other doing this because loads of people don't have the family support. I presume the government is not going to subsidize child kennels for couples to go on swinger holidays.
Yeah.
So, you know, your friend group, we've got to like make this the norm. We got to do this for each other. It was so good. I really liked my husband. I was like, oh yeah, this guy, you know, good times.
That's nice. Well, I suppose though, that scheme though would have a knock-on effect in that if there's two parents, one of them moves out to look after somebody else's kids, leaving that remaining parent with the existing kids, maybe they might be fantastic at doing that. They might be a bit resentful because their partner has moved out to look mind somebody else's kids while they're being covered in vomit and poop.
Madness.
And stuff.
No, ridiculous. I love having a free gaff.
Yeah.
With my kids. Like, I love when, you know, my husband goes out for the night, he's gone, I get into bed, sometimes even before the children. Like, I'm staggering to bedtime on my hands and knees.
Yeah.
And like, he's gone. Then in the morning, he's all kind of weakened and hungover, and I can kind of slag him, and it's a little bit of sport for me. When you've got, like, I have three kids, so even if we're there together managing them, we're already outnumbered anyway. If he's gone, sure, look, you know, what's 3-on-1? It's grand.
So you're in Boston getting an award for Where I End.
Yeah.
The
Americans.
I thought that was a fantastic book,
I must say.
So I thought that was very well deserved. And then you went to Cape Cod?
I did. When I was in Boston, I got a boat over. There was like a 90-minute kind of ferry ride to Provincetown, which is a really cool, like, party town, Cape Cod, all exactly what you're imagining. Clapboard houses in pastel colours. And it's also kind of like gay Vegas. It's like big, you know, like gay sort of contingent living there and like loads of partying and like iconic clubs and like drag artists. And like, it's just got this carnival feel. And it's absolutely class. And when I got there, I was like, oh, I just really want to set like at least part of a book here because it's magic. And there's also like a whole kind of, there's like a literary history to Provincetown as well. Like Jack Kerouac went out there to work, Eugene O'Neill, like huge writers in kind of American letters lived in these dune shacks that have no electricity, no running water, and they're out in the remote side, the non-gay Vegas side of the island.
And they're still there.
They're still there. There's about 19 still standing.
Yeah.
And it's like wilder than our like West Coast. It's like, the beaches, you know, and the waters are very treacherous out by the dune shacks. And they are like, some of them look kind of like, I don't know, like the skeletal remains of like a sort of like Leviathan or something like that. And then you look closer and you realize it's a shack that somebody's sleeping in. And like, you can go out there and do like an artist retreat by candlelight. Mm. It's absolutely class. I'd love to do that. Every year they do a lottery and everyone across the world can enter to win like a week in the dune shacks. It's a very cool place, very bohemian. And yeah.
But I always got the impression that like everyone there is loaded.
Well, the Coen brothers have a house there. Not there in the dune shacks. Yeah. In the posh part.
In the posh part.
In the posh part. Everyone loaded. Yeah. I mean, there's a nice kind of rough and ready vibe to it as well.
Oh, sure.
But yeah,
but everyone's a millionaire.
They are loaded, of course. And in my book, Such a Good Couple, not to bring it around to it again, but available in all good bookshops, they are loaded. One of the couples in Such a Good Couple is stratospherically rich. And it's because the guy has made it as like an A-list actor. He's kind of like a Paul Mescal type. Mm. And so like, this is a group of friends from college. So imagine you're like, best mate from college is now just like Colin Farrell, just casually an A-list actor. And so they bring their friends away on holidays every year because like there's no sense in like piling into a campsite anymore when they could like buy the campsite. So they foot the bill on this like amazing luxury holiday with like afternoons on yachts and like, you know, a huge compound on the beach. But I suppose a lot of it is looking at like the weirdness that evolves when like you have this massive disparity among friends and like money. It's definitely a weird territory.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing, even like that comes in all the time that, you know, that my friends who I went to college with and blah, blah, blah. But now they're, you know, they work down in the docks or something and they're getting married in China or something. And they want everyone to travel over there. But I'm, you know, I work in the Department of Energy and I can't afford it. And they just don't understand that.
Yeah. It's definitely weird. Like you kind of wake up, I think, kind of sometime in your 30s and look around and your friends, there's just telltale signs. There's a mulberry bag now at brunch. And you're like, oh, did I make a few bad decisions in my life? Few wrong turns. And yeah, like I think, and people are not, like Irish people especially are low key, I think, about this stuff. Hmm. But like you do just kind of, you know, you get into adulting and everyone's going their own path and it can be a little bit like, you know, who's got what now? Mm. Who's, you know, yeah. And it can just definitely lead to weird vibes among friends.
I mean, and that a mulberry bag or it could be, you know, the shoes at the Red Soles or whatever you call them. But if you point it out, then they kind of become like, oh, how did that get there? Kind
like,
of reaction. This horrible thing.
Yeah. I found it on the sole of my shoe in pennies. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like Irish people are kind of wonderfully extra weird about it, I think, for sure. Which is bad because be proud like of, you know, the stuff you've achieved for sure. But it's in the book, like the rich friends are constantly trying to kind of pay away the problems of their Pavo friends. And like I don't sadly have a rich friend trying to be a benefactor, but I can imagine if somebody was sort of like, oh, here, like I can get you out of that like crappy house you're living. I'd be like, okay, that's what, you know, my house is okay. Mm. And, you know, and you start looking at your own life,
you reach a point where you start to think, I can swallow my pride. That book is called Such a Good Couple, as Sophie mentioned continuously in all good bookshops as well. Sophie, thanks a million for coming in to us.
Thank you, Sean.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.